It is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. It is a place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. In the center of our service, in the center of our lives, let us make room for life's quieter sides. We may use these first moments for lighting candles of memory and hope, or just sitting quietly, remembering who you are and why you are here.
I never write prayers in a lighthearted mood, but I did this morning. I keep replaying an imaginary phone call I'm making to whatever cosmic department is in charge of Christmas, trying to get the kind that I want. I call this number, and when they answer, I say, "Hello, I'd like to order a perfect Christmas. Who do I need to talk to about this?" The line goes dead. I call back, "Okay, look, how about a nearly perfect Christmas? Can I get one of those?" Silence. "All right. What about a truly special Christmas?" More silence. "Okay, look, it's getting late in December, and I've got to have something. What have you got?" "A messy Christmas." "I don't want a messy Christmas. Who wants a messy Christmas? What about a truly horrid Christmas then?" "No, I don't want a truly horrid Christmas." "So we're back to messy, huh? You're sure it'll be all right?" "It will be messy." "Messy, fine. I'll have a messy Christmas. After all, how bad can it be?" They're laughing. They're all laughing. "When will it get here?" "You'll know." "What's that mean, you'll know?" "Hello? Hello?" They said amen.
This is a time laden with symbols from many traditions. Certainly Hanukkah brings out some, Kwanzaa others. Christianity is rife. I like to say it's rife with symbols. And then there's the secular, the tree and Santa Claus, and who used to be a saint, by the way, but he's now become rather secular. All of these things kind of bombard us. It's a little bit confusing sometimes. But there are some symbols that have some meaning to me that always get my attention, even when I'm embarrassed about them, and that's angels. Now, I'm embarrassed about angels. I think they're corny. I think they're weird. And on the other hand, I sincerely wish that they were, that they existed. I would love to see the wings. I would love to see the whole thing, even if I trembled at the sight. Meanwhile, they show up on trees, on cards, wrapping paper, clothes, tableau, and this Wednesday they showed up in the children's pageant. It was really a gift if you missed that one. But I have to mention, of course, there were the shepherds and Mary and Joseph and the sheep, very memorably. But the angels always get my attention. The angels generally have various roles to play in the stories. Often they're announcing things. Occasionally it's a warning. But in this season, it would be the incredible event of the birth of a child of the divine, the special child, Jesus. And it can be something that angels are helping. There's a lot of talk about guardian angels. There's the seraphim and whatever who are frightening, and we really don't want to meet them close up. But the guardian angels are very special. They're close to people's hearts because these are the ones who try to help us to remember that life is a gift, as in the movie It's a Wonderful Life, which shows every year and probably will show, I don't know, maybe when the earth blows up, It's a Wonderful Life will not be shown again. In the 1987 German film, one of my favorites, Wings of Desire, a story is told about an angel who chooses to become human, to step out of the aloof, observing, being helpful mode and become human, the messy life of part of being human. There's one particular scene that I can picture sharp as can be any time I think of it. There's a library. This is still in black and white because he has not become human then. It gets color after that. But there are humans sitting around in chairs in the library, and they're all reading, and they're all thinking. And the angels are standing. The angels don't hover much. They're not really. They're just a little bit more looking like you and I in this film. But they stand nearby. And you begin to hear the people murmur despair, sorrow, anxiety, anxiousness, and that each angel will lean in a bit. And then gradually the person's thoughts begin to get a little less dreary, a little less hopeless, and a little hope creeps in, and that, yes, the next day will happen, and there will be things that will be good in it. And you just hear this process over and over and over again. And I thought, yeah, that's what we need. We need somebody leaning in just a little bit, just enough to remember that we're in community, that we're not alone, and to remember that life is still a gift. Now, I don't know whether there are actually unseen angels walking around, leaning in whenever we're in despair. I don't know if they get joyful when we get joyful. Nobody's ever written about that one, I don't think, except for Christmas, you know, the Jesus and all of that joy. They got pretty joyful around then, but nothing about regular people. But I think there are angels walking around on earth that we can actually see, though we may not know who they are. The ones that we're liable to think of as angels are the famous ones, the men and women who have only to enter a room and people's spirits lift. The one that I think of that probably everyone knows is the Dalai Lama, who evidently has quite an effect on many, many people. Years ago, I had my own close encounter with such a person. It was Katagiri Roshi, who at that time, he had founded the Zen monastery in San Francisco, and he was coming back to visit from Minneapolis. One of my friends said, oh, come on, you'll like it. And I was pretty cynical at the time. I don't know. I don't do that meditation thing, and I don't know whether I really want to come, but it was my friend. So it was kind of part of the package. We were going to do some other things, and there was the car. And so I said, okay. Instead of sitting out in the car and waiting for hours for the Buddhist ceremony to be over, I would go with him. And we went. And there was a ceremony. I don't remember much about it. I was way in the back, and I was really not involved. But afterwards, they had a meeting with him, with the Roshi, in a small room with a few people. And people asked questions, and he answered them or made comments. And it was in that time that something changed for me. Something about the compassion in his face. And it also was the first time I had ever seen a human being let go of whatever he was feeling in the moment right away. He would laugh and then he'd let it go. He would say something somber, and he would let it go. I was stunned. I know that my words here are inadequate to tell you, to really convey what it was like. It was one of those things, you had to be there. But I got to tell you, I started out tired, bitter, exhausted, really just cranky altogether. I walked out of that room, and I was energized, and I was moved. And it felt deep. And that's saying something, especially in that time of my life. I was not generally open to that. So there are people who can, by their very being, how they are in the world, can move us. And he was one, obviously, to me, he was one of those people. Now, it's wonderful to have those moments with these higher beings, that we call them, people who have somehow grasped some of the sacred, and they walk around with it in each day. But that doesn't happen very often. So I'm here to tell you the good news is that there are angels walking around who we don't know. We don't recognize them as angels, perhaps. And they could be you, and they could be me, and they could be just about anybody. We have those moments when we lean in. We have those moments when we give a hug, a smile, when we step out of the daily routine for just a second and we give something special, or that we open our hearts to something special that someone else is giving. It could be a stranger on a bus. It could be anybody. Now, in the ancient Hebrew tradition, there is a story about a special group of people called the Lamed Tov, 36 people who are capable of responding to human suffering. Because of them, God is said to have spared the world. The catch is that no one knows who they are, not even the 36. So obviously, we should assume that we may be the 36, and we have a job to do. Or we may assume that the person across from us, who is irritating the bejeebies out of us, may also be one of the 36 and be giving us maybe a difficult gift. Or maybe there's something there. Maybe there is something. Maybe there's an angel right there in front of us. Whatever it is that the gift is, it reminds us that we are not alone, that there is a life to be still lived, that we are part of all of this. We belong in this world. We are cared for. Now, I bring all of this up especially because this is my last sermon with you all. I know that's maybe a surprise to some of you. You will hear soon enough, if you haven't already, that things have not gone well in my internship. Davidson and I have turned out not to be a match. It happens that way sometimes. And we both take the internship experience too seriously to want to continue when our styles are so different. I think the phrase I've heard is oil and water. Not all the time. We just wanted to clarify that. Not every moment. Otherwise, maybe we would have killed each other or I would have been gone much sooner. But definitely oil and water. It makes it too difficult for others as well, for the congregation, for the people we work with. So we have agreed mutually that I will be leaving my internship at the end of this month, and I will be leaving Austin and for any contact at the end of January. I don't want anybody to worry about me because I'm going back to San Francisco Bay Area, which is just rich. Absolutely rich in opportunities. It's rich in contacts for me. I just spent 3 years of seminary there. So it's like, when am I going to have time to write to everyone and call everyone? There's so many people. I hesitate to do group letters, but I don't know how this is going to work. I have a lot of time, January coming up. I also want to put in a plug. I have to admit, I have a plug. I'm going to be doing 4 classes of interplay, which is my spiritual discipline of movement and voice and storytelling, and Wednesday evenings. And there's sign-up down in the foyer or in the gallery. So if you would like to at least get a taste and see what it's like and see if you want to continue on, please join us. It's $10, very, very cheap, and lots of fun as well. So I will be around a little bit in January as well and still in touch. Meanwhile, I will be exploring options for my next internship, which hopefully will be San Francisco, but if not, there will be other places to apply to, and I will return to look for jobs and housing and all that good stuff. The main reason that I go through all of this, besides saying goodbye, which I think is really, really important, I'm not the type to slink off into the sunset, though actually when my 20s I did quite, whew, she was gone. I was known for my startling fast exits. At 62, I just don't move that fast anymore, so I've decided to give it up. And besides, I need to tell you about the angel moments that I had in this congregation. And thank you for them. The kind words, the hugs, the smiles, the sharings, the listenings, the people who offered rides or even the let me use their cars, the people who welcomed me into their homes, the people who I got to work with on committees and projects, and the staff who welcomed a newcomer into their midst warmly and completely. I felt in community and not alone fairly quickly. Also, I want to mention the warm collegial moments with Davidson and my ministry cluster, as well as my spectacularly great internship committee. I want to put a plug in for them. It has made all the difference. I'm not a fast starter when it comes to being in a new community, and this has been incredibly fast. You have made it so. I want to wish you all well. May you continue to bless all who come into this place. And I want to give the best to your continuing adventure as a community as you look into what the next phase is for what's up for you. You will continue. Absolutely, you will continue to be in my thoughts and my prayers. And I say to you now, Amen, Shalom, Salam, and blessed be.
It may feel a little surprising to come to church expecting some kind of release from whatever stresses and strains you've been under, and then learn that even Christmas services often take place against the background of the real world. Even ministers and interns who sometimes dress up in robes like this can have such differences in their understanding of what religion and ministry are about that a supervisory relationship can't work. It hasn't happened here before, but it does happen several times every year in the UUA. So it is part of the normal run of things, and it isn't necessarily tragic. Most ministers who had a bad match in their first internship have done fine in second internships and gone on to serve churches happily and well. But no matter how we wrap it, it's painful, and it feels like a failure for both of us. These are the kind of very human feelings with which everyone here can identify. Ordering a perfect Christmas and getting a messy one. As I thought about it, I realized that most of our favorite stories and most of our favorite Christmas stories are also kind of messy. I think it's why we like them. So I want to share something a little different this year. I want to share a few messy stories of some of the things that life brings us. A couple of them may not sound like Christmas stories, but I think they are. They're at least Christmas gifts. One of the messiest of the stories has to be the traditional Christmas story. Goodness, a young couple can't even find a decent place to have their baby who winds up being born in a barn. A million preachers have played on that picture of the birth of the sacred taking place off stage and out of sight, the last place you'd expect it, but the place where it's usually born. That's really the message of the ancient winter solstice celebrations, too. They were all about finding light and hope, but they were about finding light and hope in the middle of the darkest and coldest nights. And not all good stories are like Hallmark cards or rides at Disney World. Some of the most memorable are also the messiest and the most real, and I think that's why we like them. I'll share one from my own family of origin. It was the favorite Christmas story of my parents and an aunt who lived with us when I was 2.5 years old. She was 22 and was living with us to save money for her coming marriage. But for Christmas, she put aside enough to buy something special for me that she knew I would love, a little red scooter. She put off shopping for it until December 24th. Unfortunately, Tulsa had a rare snowstorm that day, 2 or 3 inches of snow, which paralyzes that city almost as badly as it would paralyze Austin. She took the bus downtown, and she found the scooter. It was the last one the department store had. Those little red scooters were apparently very popular that year. Then she had to carry this awkward thing through thousands of shoppers, with every third person yelling at her because they'd been hit by the handlebars. All the way home, the scooter or its handlebars seemed to seek out people to hit. And by the time she got to our stop, she felt like she'd been yelled at by half the bus. It got worse. She got off the bus and began to walk the 70 or 80 yards to our house when she saw me out in the front yard playing in the snow. So she snuck behind several neighbors' houses, climbing over or through their fences, and dragging her presence and that scooter along, trying not to scratch it. As she came through our next-door neighbor's snow-covered yard, she stepped in a hole and twisted her ankle. Somewhere right about then, she stopped loving the little red scooter. And she may have had second thoughts about me, too. But she got to our back door, hauled the thing down into the basement and hid it in the furnace room, cleaned it up and put a big bow on the handlebars. On Christmas Day, after all the presents had been opened, my aunt said that she had bought a very special present for me, but I had to cover my eyes while she brought it up from downstairs. She brought it upstairs, set it up right in front of me, then told me I could open my eyes. I looked at it, then I looked at her and said, "I didn't want a scooter." She told me this story for the first time when I was 21. And she thought that the message of it was that I was damn lucky to be alive. The truth is, I don't remember that Christmas, and I have absolutely no memory of that scooter from any time in my childhood. Apparently, the truth is that I really didn't want it, and I never played with it. Sometimes what life brings isn't a gift we don't want, but an attachment to something that we do want that will hurt us if we can't let go of it. For about a decade, I've loved a story told by San Francisco physician Rachel Naomi Riemann about a young man she worked with many years before. He had been stranded in snow for 3 days on a skiing party. Not long before he was to be married, his right foot developed gangrene, and the doctor said it would have to be amputated. But he would not give them permission to amputate his foot. And he kept refusing until the time was approaching when they would no longer be able to save his life unless they removed his foot. Finally, his fiancée got so angry, she took his engagement ring off and put it on to the swollen black little toe of his right foot. "I hate this damned foot," she sobbed. "If you want this foot so much, why don't you marry it? You're going to have to choose, because you can't have us both." Sometimes survival demands letting go of everything but life itself. And a third story is one I had never thought of as a Christmas story until now. It's one that's been told in a lot of ways. You've probably heard some variation on it, at least the ending. It's also from Dr. Riemann. It involved a star, apparently a superstar, football player from one of the California colleges who developed a bone cancer in his right leg and had to have it amputated above the knee. It ended his life as he had known it, a life of fast cars, many women, and an easy popularity. He went into a long destructive period of rage, alcohol, drugs, and a couple car accidents. In one of their first sessions, Dr. Riemann gave him a sheet of drawing paper and a box of crayons and asked if he could draw a picture of his body. He drew a sketch of a vase. Then through the center, he began drawing a huge, deep crack. He went over and over the crack with a black crayon, gritting his teeth and ripping the paper. In time, his anger began to evolve into an empathy with other young people he read about in the paper who had also gone through life-changing injuries like his. And he would cut out the articles and bring him to his meetings with Dr. Riemann. Now he was angry at the statements by the doctors that were printed in the paper because he felt that they didn't understand a thing about what their patients were really going through. One day, he asked Dr. Riemann if she could get him in to see any of these patients. Within a few weeks, he was visiting them. And within a few months, doctors were asking him to see patients who had lost legs, arms, anything that could change their self-image in dramatic and depressing ways. He really did understand them in ways the doctors couldn't because he'd been there. Then he was asked to visit a very difficult young woman who had a tragic family history. Breast cancer had claimed the lives of her mother, her sister, and her cousin, and her other sister was in chemotherapy. So at age 21, she took one of the only options open at that time and had both of her breasts removed surgically. Afterwards, she sank into a very deep depression and would not talk to anyone. This young man took it on and finally got her attention by going into her room wearing summer shorts and unstrapping his artificial leg, which made so much noise when it hit the floor that she looked up to see him hopping around her room in time to the music from her radio. It was a ridiculous sight. After a moment, she burst out laughing. "Fella," she said, "if you can dance, maybe I can sing." Before long, they began visiting patients together. She was in school and encouraged him to return to school to study psychology so that he could develop his gifts further. And a couple years later, they were married. In his final meeting with Dr. Riemann, she found the picture of the broken vase that he had drawn 2 years before and handed it to him. He looked at it for some time, and then he said, "You know, it's not really finished." He took a yellow crayon and began to draw lines radiating out from the crack in every direction, all the way out to the edges of the paper, thick yellow lines. Finally, he put his finger on the crack and he said softly, "This is where the light comes through." Though I had never thought of the story this way before, this is almost a perfect Christmas story. and is from the very heart of what this season has always been about. The birth of something sacred from within the messy darkness of the real world. The return of light after it had seemed to disappear forever. The most formative moments of our lives are almost never in the well-laid plans we made, but in the unexpected and unwelcome disruptions of those plans, and are sometimes remarkable responses to them. As John Lennon said, life really is what happens while we're making other plans. So the story isn't a miracle in the sense of supernatural beings or wandering stars or adoring wise men coming from afar. It's better than that. It's a real world story of transformation in the here and now by the kind of light that can sometimes enter only through the cracks in our well-planned lives. Life's a messy thing. Sometimes we do get just what we wanted, but that's not a very interesting story. Sometimes we get gifts that really are little red scooters. And the truth is, we didn't want them. Not then or ever, in spite of the best intentions of the giver. The lesson could be that we don't have to like something just because it's a gift. Sometimes we are given seductive curses to which we become attached and which we must leave behind in order to live. Alcoholism and other addictions are like this. We become attached to them. We want them, maybe more than anything. But like that young man's dead foot, eventually they can kill us if we don't let go of them and choose life again. Relationships can be like this too. Unhealthy relationships can become familiar and habit-forming. And to choose life, we may have to leave a relationship that is killing our spirit. And once in a while, we can be cursed with a terrible and life-changing loss of a leg, a beloved person, a partner who was our soulmate. It cracks us apart, and we no longer want to choose life again. That's probably the worst. And then if we're lucky, we may find somewhere down the road that a new kind of light and a new kind of life enter only because that crack had opened us up in ways we'd never been opened before. These are some of the messy gifts of life at Christmas or any other season. The little red scooter gifts that we really didn't want. The seductive attachments that can destroy us if we don't let go of them. And that awful kind of curse that breaks us open and ends the life as we'd known it, but which with luck and work can open us to a kind of light that can transform us in ways we'd never imagined. This mess is the gift of life for which we give thanks. It isn't ever going to be perfect. And one reason we give thanks is just because part of the game is our chance to sort through the gifts and other offerings and put it together our own way into our own kind of life. As you know, life comes to us in kit form. And part of the reason people gather in churches like this every week is to piece together parts of a kit that can make their own lives. Because there is some assembly required and a lot of little sticks and things to put together and a lot of spare parts we don't want. But if we can rub the right sticks together in the right way, they can create light. They really can. Merry Christmas to all of us.